Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's Political Commentary.
With David Slack this morning. Kia ora, David. How are you?
Morning, Rachel. I'm well, thank you.
That is good to hear.
Starting up on the daily newsletter.
Oh, nice, nice. How is the bubble going for you?
I was crook as a dog last week, so I've lost track of my weeks now. Yeah, last week. And so I, in fact, had turned up for a COVID test on Monday afternoon. I was therefore a man of that age in Devonport turning up for a test at the same time as the dude who actually got a positive. So this was a surreal experience. Mine was negative, but I had another one yesterday just to make sure.
Excellent. Good on you doing the right thing.
And I'm waiting to get that result, so I may be able to give you a little live action this morning. This is about the time of the morning when you're supposed to get it.
Excellent. Well, we'll find out then, won't we? Hopefully it'll all just be negative and easy for you there. There's been a lot of discussion about this particular lockdown, and we're seeing that it's pretty well received. People are happy to be in lockdown. In fact, there's more concerns about perhaps coming out of it too early. It's an interesting thing, though, because overseas we're seeing a lot of different discussion about the way that New Zealand is handling this. It's that same thing we've seen often throughout the pandemic of the outward lens and the inward lens of media looking at this. Why do you think we get this discrepancy overseas, particularly, I think, at the moment with Australia, who are abandoning their particular the same elimination strategy that we are going for? We're seeing a lot more discussion over there saying that, oh, look, it's not working in New Zealand, which, you know, we know is not necessarily true. But why do you think we're seeing this reflected overseas?
Men who hate to be wrong.
Okay.
That's a simple answer. You
know? That's a good one, yeah.
Well, it's true, you know. That's the whole sense of the Plan B argumentation that you've been having for the last year. It's the idea that somebody latched onto one position and then the facts have disproved them and they can't bear it and they want to go on asserting that they'll be right in the end. And it's just wearing. Demonstrably, this thing runs away faster, and so it is harder to contain it, but we have every prospect of containing it still, and so we're sticking at it. And it's certainly unnerving to see that kind of exponential expansion that they told us we could expect, and sure enough, it is. But that doesn't mean that this isn't the best way. None of these are ideal, but this is absolutely the most assured one. And it's simply that elsewhere, it's got away on them. And so now they're trying to rationalise the fact that they have to live with it. And you get these logical contortions. And it's human emotion, you know, getting in the way of rational treatment of the problem. But, you know, you watch our officials in government just cleaving to what they know is the most assured strategy, and you get no sense at all that it's making them have second thoughts or misgivings. There's no better option. And I think, you know, to your initial point, that's why New Zealanders are, for them in the main, very happy with this, and they know that it's the best option, and they're happy to comply. I think, in fact, you get a sense there's a greater willingness to comply than there was last time when the science of it was not so well demonstrated or understood. Mm. So on we go, you know. And meantime, you've got the prospect that once there are vaccinations, there's a prospect of being much better protected. You may well still get it, but there's a 25-fold decrease in admissions to hospital once you're protected. I'm quoting from one expert in America earlier this morning, and I like that. The 25-fold difference. That's really profound. That's the comfort you get, knowing that there's a way ahead that makes the prospect of living with this thing tolerable.
It's an interesting thing what you mentioned there about how I think people are starting to feel about what a lockdown means. You know, we've done this before, which in some ways is daunting and frustrating and can be really traumatic for people. But also at the same time, there is this sense that we understand the gravity of the situation and also what sticking it out actually looks like. And it looks like successfully being able to squash an outbreak. And I think we're seeing that reflected in the way people are responding to this lockdown, which is for the most part fairly positive. I wanted to get your thoughts around what is happening over in Australia, because this is effectively perhaps going to mean the end of the travel bubble, because the Prime Minister has said while there is COVID in the community in Australia, we're not going to be seeing travel between Aotearoa and that country. Do you think that we will see any reopening of those borders at any time in the near future, or is this the right way forward, in your opinion, David?
Oh, I bet it's going to be slow. There's a further consideration that was being talked about this morning, and that is the, you know, as our numbers of infections grow and we have to isolate people, there's not actually going to be MIQ room for the travel, which would be the first step back. You know, before you're having a bubble, you would have travel once more, you know, in larger volumes between the country, I think. And we may not have the room for that even, you know, for a while. But putting that aside, this has absolutely demonstrated that the agitation for this was, you know, a little misguided. Mm. You know, it always made more sense to be waiting for high levels of vaccination before you did any of this. But there was a great agitation for the economic benefit of having the bubble. Well, at $1.5 billion a week, whatever economic advantage this created is rapidly dissipating. Now, there's the human value of it as well. Families reunited, and that's obviously a desirable thing. But all of these things are a ranking of priorities. And, you know, we're looking for the least bad option here. And if we had not had the bubble, we would not have the virus here right now. That's as simple as that. And that thinking must surely colour how we return to that, especially given that the New South Wales Premier and their Prime Minister over there have effectively surrendered. And shameless plug, Rachel, my sub-slack.substack.com blog has a piece on Tuesday entitled Scotty Absolute Spark Plug. And I absolutely commend it to readers as a thorough assessment of why he's so goddamn useless and in fact, a walking liability to the nation. And it turns out to us as well. He was here in the 90s working for NZ Inc. And he screwed us then. And here he is, bloody 20 years down the track, still dealing it to us.
Well, I wanted to get your thoughts on vaccination as well. We're seeing a great uptake in the vaccine at the moment, which is, I guess, a silver lining to the current situation we're in. People are really getting out there and getting their vaxes. But there has been some criticism that we're seeing still major vulnerable groups, particularly Pacifica and Māori, falling behind. And that's been brought up by many health authorities. It's not the fault of those groups, but perhaps the fault of the government and the rollout strategy not being available enough to those people or available enough in those spaces. And we're hearing calls now that we've got people over the age of 30 able to book their vaccines, that we should be seeing some priority booking for the most vulnerable at this stage. Do you agree with that? And how do you think it could be better communicated with the population at large, but also just these varying sort of groups that people are in when they fall under, you know, who's available when to go and get their vaccine? What are your thoughts around this particular part of the rollout?
Actually, I've got a slightly different point of view on this, coloured by what I keep hearing from somebody I know who's been working on the Healthline vaccination desk. You know, they're taking the calls and helping with people get their vaccine, been doing it for some months now. And they have been remarking on how impressed they've been with the outreach dimension of the program. That is to say, it goes into particular vulnerable communities, into community groups, into iwi, into any exactly all of the vulnerable groups that you're just describing. You know, there's been a conscious intention to reach in there and make that happen, and this has been going on. So you will get a story, as you did yesterday from Barbara Drever, suggesting otherwise, but it just depends where you look, I think. You know, just because a particular community hasn't been reached, it doesn't mean that a lot of vulnerable ones haven't. And this is, you know, I kept getting messages from this person saying, here, that today they were talking to this place, and it's been really heartening to see. So I somewhat doubt the premise, but I entirely agree with the sentiment. It's also worth bearing in mind that if you consider Pacifica community in particular, you have a very substantial demographic bulge in the younger group. So until you get under 30, you haven't got there yet anyway. But once you do, I suspect that you hadn't. That changes now. But, you know, those same tools, I suspect, will be deployed to make contact in an effective way. Look, I might be proved wrong, but my impression is it's not necessarily what media reports might suggest.
And just lastly, we did see last time when we went into a level 4 lockdown, pretty immediate rollout of support for people in renting situations. And this time we've had some law changes. So there are things like only one rent increase in 12 months is allowed to be rolled out. And that is part of the reasoning why we haven't, from the government, why we haven't seen necessarily explicit support put out for those groups. Do you think we do need to see that at this time? Or have we got enough in place to protect these people under level 4?
Yeah, I think it's a bit precarious, and I think something more needs to happen. It was interesting looking at coverage of the Select Committee yesterday, the Social Services and Community Committee. Ricardo March was asking about, for example, doubling the winter energy payment as they did last year, and Carmel Cipollone was saying it's just come a bit too late this year. But she also had some sort of suggestion of watch this space, which suggests to me they are mindful that maybe there isn't enough support there and they need to do more. That whole idea of having security at a point like this is... vital. Mm. And there was a kind of a recognition in that hearing, I think, that maybe it isn't as robust as it could be, and so there might be more. And God knows, we don't do as much as we could for our poorest, and there's a strong argument for doing more always, but especially now.
Well, thank you very much, David Slack. It's always great to have you on the show. Fingers crossed for a negative COVID text for you shortly.
Thank you. I'm refreshing.
Excellent. We'll take care in your bubble, and we will talk to you again in a couple of weeks' time, hopefully. We'll see you soon.
Cheers, Rachel.
All right. Ka kite.
You just heard a bit of political commentary
with David.